Let me ask you a question. Are you tired? Most people say yes, especially first-time parents, am I right? Yes. But have you ever been utterly exhausted? And not just physically, the kind of tired that no nap or sleep can fix. You try to get 5 hours, 6 hours, 7, 8 hours, you wake up and you still feel worn out. That's it, right? That's the culture we live in. This constant noise with constant demands, expectations. And it's not just about being physically tired. I think there's many of us who are walking around emotionally fatigued, relationally burnt out, spiritually exhausted, and unsure really how to find true rest. The world tells us, hustle more, hustle harder. You are what you produce. Do more, be more. Let's face it, social media amplifies it. Look at everyone else. They're achieving, they're happy, they're excited, they're spending, they're living. We live in a restless world. And even Christians fall into that trap. We struggle, we perform, we worry deep down, am I really secure with God? So let me ask, are you tired? Most people say yes. And into that, the writer of Hebrews offers something stunning. He says, yet the promise of entering His rest still stands. The writer is pointing us to a rest that just isn't a day off or some kind of fancy vacation. It's something far, far deeper than that. A rest that God Himself entered. So tonight, for all of us, there is a beautiful door that stands open, but the question is for us tonight, will we strive to enter that rest? I do want to say good evening. We traveled about 3 hours from San Antonio, Texas, and this place holds very special and dear memories, at least to myself. I think back in 2008, I heard y'all just had your VBS last week, right? I believe back in 2008, I was coerced. And I want to use the word coerced by Elaine Jackson and Tracy Rhodes. There were, I think, short maybe of some VBS Bible teachers. I was a brand new Christian. Give me a brand new Christian, right? I got baptized in 2007. I was 22 years old here in Aggieland. And they were like, you know what? We need some teachers, and I think you would do a great job. Well, I was going to be in College Station that summer, and my roommates, they were just going to be hanging out. I just kind of wanted to hang out too, but with their encouragement and their convincing, I got to teach VBS, I believe, with the fifth grade class that year. I think we had Brent Willison there, Zachary Brown, Hannah Goble, and one of the McShane girls as well, too. And to see what y'all are continue doing with VBS and to see those kids still strong in the faith, it's awesome. And I believe, actually, I was the only male that summer to be teaching one of the classes. And it was great. But College Station, this is where I became a Christian. This is my first church with my first elders and my first preacher, my first home congregation. I didn't have a church back in San Antonio. But I had one here in College Station, and it is awesome. I mean, awesome to be back here, to see a lot of familiar faces, but again, to see some of y'all again striving for that rest. So let me ask, how would you say this is what rest means? If someone were to ask you, well, what is God's rest? What do you do with that? So I think for some of us, before we dive into our text in Hebrews, there's something I want to do with y'all tonight. Let's define God's rest, and you may discover that there's something more to it than what we typically think of. So what is it? What is God's rest? Well, let's trace that. And what better place to start than the very beginning? So let's head to Genesis chapter 2. If you got those Bibles, turn them open. Let's read some verses in Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2, we encounter this first rest. Genesis chapter 2. Let's read these first few verses together. In verse 1, it says, "Thus the heavens and the earth were completed, and all their host. By the seventh day, God completed his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work, which he had done." Verse 3, "Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it, because in it he rested from which his work, which God had created and made." This is usually what comes up. Okay, 6 days, creation, 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 creation. Seventh day, why does God rest? Is it because he's tired? Well, we know the answer is no, of course not. This is God, the Father, the Creator. But he's resting from this completion. He had finished his work. When you finish some work, we delight. He delighted in it. But don't miss the pattern in all of this. You have the light, the earth, the seas, the vegetation, right? The sun, the moon, the stars, creatures of the air, creatures of the sea, and now creatures on the land, and then us. Man, me and you, right? He is the creator. But don't miss that he is the creator of life. In every single one of those stages, God is resting or God is stopping. Why? It's to spend time with his people. God loves people. He loves his creation. And so when you get there, there's no more creation of planets. There's no more creation of animals. There's no more creation of trees. He's saying, I'm going to spend my time with Adam and Eve. This is the first rest. God, in the garden, there's no sin yet, right? There's no sin. This is the very first time that our God is partaking in fellowship with mankind and living in each other's presence. This is rest. Until Adam and Eve break it. And from this point, it just begins this cascade of broken decisions made by broken people until this man is called out by the name of Abram. And so now Abram enters the scene and he's 75, right? 75 years young, right? And when you know the text, there's a situation though with him and his wife that's very notable. The situation is what? 75, they have no kids. Zilch, zero, goose egg, 75 years old. And now he's called out. And three promises are given. We know these: the nation, the land, the seed. And now many, 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 many hundreds of years later, we have ourselves finally a people. Lots of people. Now, at this time, they seem to be rotting away in the land of Egypt. But now, once again, a promise of a coming rest. In Deuteronomy chapter 12, in Deuteronomy chapter 12, and 9 and 10, it says, "For you have not as yet to the resting place and the inheritance which the Lord your God has given you, When you cross the Jordan and live in the land which the Lord your God has given you to inherit, and he gives you rest. He gives you rest from all your enemies around you so that you live in security. So what is God's rest? Well, in the garden, it's this fellowship. And now here he kind of adds to it. This rest, right? This land is meant to be a place of safety. This rest, this land's a place of security, right? This land, this place is a place of settledness. It's a restoration of some types. But yet this supposed restoration quickly turns into a season of grumbling and complaining. We know these stories, and most of them do not enter. Why? Because of their unbelief. The author in Hebrews simply says, they doubt. They doubt God's goodness, and they doubt God's power. This was promised rest until the Exodus generation misses it. Let's keep tracking. As we continue to trace this forward, there's one quick note I want to make. Again, back in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 15, the text says that God took Adam and then he put him into the garden. Just from the natural reading, it kind of reads as God kind of picks up Adam. He like picks him up. He like places him, says, here you are in the garden. You're not going to stumble upon this, right? You're not going to kind of walk into it. I'm going to take you, create you, and then put you there. That's important. Because later, here in our story, God is going to take Israel and then put them into the land. We see now this kind of unraveling, right? This has always been the goal, for God to have this fellowship, this deep connection with his people, the creator of life. And so God tried this. He tried this in the garden with Adam and Eve. They didn't want it. So let's try it again. The land of Canaan, Canaan's land. This was also a type of a garden of Eden. So God makes another people, starting with Abraham and Sarah. He creates another people. He creates a nation. He creates life again from two people that seemingly cannot have children. And I'm going to offer Israel, originally what I offered to Adam and Eve. And they get there, right? Some of them get there to Canaan's land. They get there. But then you look at Exodus chapters like 31, 33, and 35. Remember what God says to now his people? He says, for 6 days, work may be done. But on the seventh day, there is a Sabbath of complete rest. Holy to the Lord. The seventh day is going to be the day that you spend with me. That's going to be the day for you and I. You don't work on that day. That's a day that you spend with God. And so now on the Sabbath day, guess what? They offer twice as many sacrifices in the temple than any other day of the week. Why? Because this is the time that you spend with your Creator. That's resting with God. And now you do this every week. And now you do this every seventh year. And now every 50th year. And as the Jubilee year as well. This is it. That's rest. Staying in fellowship. Secure from the enemies. Away from sin. Protected by God. Committed to the relationship. That is rest. So with the biblical picture, Israel sadly follows in the footsteps of Adam. in that Israel refuses to rest with God just like Adam did. It's interesting to note, when you get to kind of fast forward a little bit in Scripture, in Leviticus 26 and 2 Chronicles 36, do you remember the punishment of Israel's sin? Why they were kicked out just like Adam was? God specifically states, because you broke the Sabbath. Because you broke the rest. And now you're going to be in captivity for as long as it takes for the rest or for the Sabbath to be restored. They had it. They had rest until God's chosen people lose it. For it says, they shall not enter my rest. That's God's rest. And I think now that we kind of have a good working knowledge of God's rest, and now he kind of uses that imagery throughout the Old Testament, this is where our text now comes in. Hebrews chapter 4. God is offering you and God is offering me what Adam broke and what the Exodus generation missed and what Israel loses. It's almost as if God is saying, we are going to do this one more time. But this time is the last time. Hebrews chapter 4. Let's look at verse 1 together. He says, therefore, while the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us fear lest any of you should seem to have fallen and failed to reach it. If we just kind of look at the words used right here in Hebrews chapter 4, verse 1, he's saying, hey, a promise remains. Some translations say a promise still stands for you, right? It's not gone. It's not expired. It hasn't been taken off the shelf. He's saying, I'm still offering you this rest right here, but do you want it? And through this invitation, you see there is very scarce warning because this isn't automatic. And so in this context right here, I mean, I think there are very few words that can be more tragic than when he says that none of you to be found to have fallen short. He's saying, guess what? There is a possibility that you can fail to achieve the rest. It's a tragic phrase. We may use examples like, you know what? These boys, these kids, they worked their tail off all year and they just came short of that championship game. Or we may say, things just seem to change in an instant and the business came up short of its target sales. The whole year, it just came to be challenging. And this semester, they just came up short from graduating. He's saying, this is far greater than that. So he says, you know what? Let us fear. This is striking. Because I think modern Christianity often says, fear? No. We are Christians, right? We are saved. We don't fear. I mean, didn't God give us a power of spirit, love, and self-control? Love casts out all. We don't fear, right? Here, the Greek word for fear, phobos, guess what it means? To fear. The New Living Translation translates, so we ought to tremble with fear. This isn't, you know what, I'm scared, so I'm going to go run to the closet and lock the door behind me. No. This is a holy trembling awareness this serious recognition of what is at stake. And now the Holy Spirit's telling us that you and I, that you tonight, that you tomorrow, that me on Thursday, I could miss it. So let me ask a question. Do we sometimes assume the rest? Do we as believers sometimes assume the rest before actually entering into it? He says, therefore, while the promise of entering his rest still stands, let us fear lest any of you should seem to have failed to reach it. Verse 2. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 2. He says, for good news came to us just as to them. But the message they heard did not benefit them because they were not united by faith with those who listened. Contrast, right? Between those who hear versus between those who listen. That's it. Hearing, that's the bottom line. Hearing isn't enough. Good news was for them in the Old Testament. Now think about what the writer of Hebrews is saying right here about the people of Israel. He's saying they were in the wilderness. They had the good news proclaimed to them. The good news came to them just like it came to us, right? The Israelites, in other words, they got to experience God's saving power firsthand. The power in the Exodus, where now they're exhorted to say, enter the Lamb. You've escaped from Egypt. You've witnessed the 10 plagues, the parting of the Red Sea. How cool would have that been? He says, stay in it. Because there's a place of dwelling with God awaiting you. I mean, so what happens? If they received the good news, why did the message not benefit them? They received it. And so the answer the writer of the Hebrew gives, he says, for they were not united by faith with those who listened. They heard it, right? They heard it. They're sitting here just like you and me. They heard it, but they did not have the faith of those who did hear, and they did something about it. These two verses right here, I mean, they essentially summarize what you can read in Hebrews chapter 3. The Hebrews, the people of Israel, heard the gospel, but it did not benefit them because it didn't move them forward. It doesn't benefit them because it didn't push them to true commitment with God. Once again, I think the NIV kind of does well here. And it reads, because they did not share the faith with those who obeyed. Change, right? Those who listened to those who obeyed. The people missed entering the rest because they were not joined in the same faith that Caleb and Joshua have. I mean, these two men right here, they believe, right? They believe that God is with them. They say, here's the obstacles ahead of it. God can defeat and God can conquer. And here's a promised land, and I believe that we can get to it because God is with us. They heard, they listened, they obeyed. Now, maybe this is where we come in. You know, maybe for us, is it possible to sit here in church? You know, is it possible to hear the word? Is it possible to just to be around the things of God and still miss the rest that he offers? Yeah. So he's saying, you got to be careful. We got to be careful. We have to be careful not to confuse proximity to Christianity with actual saving faith. The rest, the commitments, the fellowship, the relationship in and with the Creator. So Israel, they hear the promise. They heard God's voice, and they still missed it. Verse 3. He says, "For we who have believed enter that rest. As he has said, I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter my rest. Although his works were finished from the foundation of the world." This is how, again, the Hebrew author starts this chapter, right? He says, "Therefore, while the promise of entering his rest still stands." And then he continues, right? "For we who have believed enter the rest." Now, for me, this is a big statement, because this really brings hope to us. I love it, because it's shocking and it's surprising. Because, real quick, show of hands. Anyone here an Israelite? Anyone here a Hebrew of Hebrews? I know, I'm curious too, Tyler. I'm like, who do we got here? Well, no. So this rest, I'm extending it to you. And this rest, I want you to have it as well. This rest right here, come on. Come on. All of you, come on. He's extending it to us. But when we read this, this is kind of the question that comes up. Well, okay, so there's all this rest language. Am I in it now? Or is this kind of like a rest that's going to be like in heaven later? He's saying this is the admonition. It's not a thing that you just do. It's something that you continue in. That's what resting with God is. So yes, if you are a believer, you've been baptized, you confess, right? You are with him now, and you'll also be with him later. All of it is rest. But the question is, are you even entering into it? This is verse 3. All right, so far it's been kind of lectury and sermony and all that kind of good stuff. So real quick, any comments or questions? Don't be shy. You're not going to ruin the jive of the sermon or lesson. Any thoughts or comments? Yes, sir.
We're talking about entering into this rest, and we must make every single possible effort to get into that rest, because it seems to be so hard. And I keep thinking about, you mentioned Caleb and Joshua, two people out of a million that took advantage, something like a million, that took advantage of what God was offering, and they took it wholeheartedly, whereas I guess everybody else just didn't do it, and that's a shame.
Absolutely. Sometimes you may feel a little alone in those decisions to move forward, but it is always worth it. Steve, I remember you. Good thoughts. Anybody else? Thoughts or comments or observations? Yes, ma'am.
When I think of rest, I think of eternal rest with God. And I think the rest we get on this earth is the peace that we have because we've done what God said. Things aren't going to always go good. We may be persecuted like some of the early Christians were, but they still had that peace here that God would provide for them in the hereafter.
Absolutely. And that's the idea. There's a rest here and now, right? Jesus. But we have to hold on to that for an eternal rest later on. Yes, ma'am. Good thoughts. Anybody else? Comments or questions? It was kind of a good place to kind of just like let us talk a little bit, because when we read verses 4 through 9 together, it's kind of chunky and kind of wordy. And so it takes a little bit of ironing out when we get there. Anybody else? All right, well, let's keep reading. Let's pick up here in chapter 4. Chapter 4 and verse 4. As we continue, he says, "For he has somewhere spoken." I always kind of like that. "For he has somewhere spoken of the seventh day." You ever been in a Bible study and someone's like, "Oh, what's that verse? Oh, it's in the Bible somewhere, right?" He's doing that right here, right? "He was spoken of the seventh day somewhere in this way. And God rested on the seventh day from all his works. And again, in this passage, he said, 'They shall not enter my rest.' Since therefore it remains for some to enter it, and those who formerly received the good news fail to enter because of disobedience. Again, he appoints a certain day today, saying through David so long afterward in the words already quoted, 'Today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts.' For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then, there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works as God did from his." Okay, I'm not sure what translation you have, but when you kind of read that, especially like New American Standard or King James Version, it's kind of easy to kind of get lost in all those rests. By the way, that word rest, it's mentioned about 8 or 9 times in 11 verses, right? And as complicated as it kind of sounds, let's just break it down a little bit, step by step. I believe what they're saying is that, is it not that the rest is not available to the wilderness generation? But this section right here, it's not just about feeling peaceful. It's about the spiritual reality that has a long working history throughout the Bible text. So he says this reaches all the way back to Genesis, as kind of we discussed earlier. And now it kind of travels and weaves through Exodus and kind of arrives with David in Psalm 95. So now what he begins to do is saying, okay, I'm going to set up this argument. For he says, "For he has spoken somewhere concerning the seventh day." Somewhere in the Bible, right? Back to chapter 4. He reminds us that Psalm 95, this is the key. Psalm 95 is the key text for really unraveling chapters 3 and 4. But in Psalm 95, he says, Israel did not enter God's rest. We understand that. So think with the author through this. If God's rest was an option, which was kind of introduced in chapter 2 of Genesis, and then when you kind of go through all the way through the scriptures, all the way through the biblical history, you pick up that it remained for some to enter into it. If it started all the way back in Genesis, has that ended? Has that closed the rest? He's saying, no, hang in there. The conclusion is that when you come and when you read these two biblical statements in their proper order, there still remains a rest. There still remains God's rest. And it's those who have the good news preached to them. Those who have been invited into God's rest, well, some of them never entered. Why? Because of their disobedience. Now, hang on to this thought. Disobedience isn't always just like, well, I'm going out Saturday night or I'm just breaking a bunch of rules that God made. In Hebrews, disobedience is primarily the sin of not trusting in God. And so because of their lack of faith, because of their lack of trust, because of their lack of endurance, Israel doesn't make it. So in verse 7, he says again, he fixes a certain day, today, saying that through David, after so long a time ago, that it's been said, today, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. Rest. Rest was offered in Genesis 2. And yet was still open because God offered it to Israel, but they don't enter into it. So the author says, It remains therefore open, right? And the way to enter into God's rest, he repeats it and repeats it and repeats it, saying, you know what? Don't forget it. Don't miss it. It's still standing. Don't forget it. The way to enter into his rest is what? It is faithful endurance. Not like Adam, not like Israel, but for us. That's the call. He's saying today, as saying, you know what? Wherever you are, or wherever you think you are with God, stay in the relationship. Because the promise for entering the rest is available at this moment or today. The proof? It's Psalm 95. Well, somebody might say, okay, well, wait a minute. You kind of skipped over a major big part of the Bible story here. Didn't Israel enter the land, though? I mean, didn't Israel enter the land with Joshua? And didn't Joshua give them rest? Yeah. I mean, Joshua got them into the promised land, yes. But the author says in verse 8, for if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. If Joshua gave them the rest that we think we're talking about, then God would not speak of something else coming after. So did Israel get to the promised land? Yes. But did they stay in their relationship with God? No. And that's what resting with God is. It's not only getting into a relationship with God, it is staying there. And that is what Israel did not do. They didn't even maintain this ongoing relationship with God. So God says, I want people here with me. Is that going to be us? Are you going to leave here and head into the rest of the week and think, that's me? Today, as David exclaimed, that's me. Today I had the rest. This dedication, this commitment, this fellowship, this relationship, nothing missed, nothing refused, nothing lost. That's to say, I've turned away from all that junk. The living for me, myself, and I, the doing it my way type attitude, that stuff is done away with. So let's wrap it up. Let's go ahead and read verse 10 and 11 one more time. He says, for whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his work as God did from his. This is our verse. So he says, let us therefore strive to enter that rest so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. Therefore, let us strive to enter that rest. There's at times in Scripture where we kind of have these paradoxical statements, right? Count it all joy when you face various trials. Whoever wants to save their life will lose it. For when I am weak, then I am strong. And there he says, you want rest? You want this eternal rest? Then you better work for it. Then you better strive. Adam and Eve, they walk with God. They had this astounding intimacy with God more than any other human, yet they questioned, they reframed, they desired more, and they break the rest. We've talked about this, the Israelites, right? They see the miracles. They hear God's voice. They ate the manna. Their problem wasn't lack of exposure. It was lack of faith-fueled obedience. So the Hebrews writer is warning. You can be close to the people of God. You can know the language. You can plug in, speak the lingo. But you can still miss it. So let's wrap up here. We have to succeed where all these examples failed. It's not that they weren't there physically, but he's saying you got to strive. You got to be diligent. You have to stay in his presence. So why does all this require striving, even for the saved? Because of the obstacles. He's saying unbelief, right? Can I really trust God? It's because of the obstacles. Pride. I can handle this on my own. It's because of the obstacles. Shame. I've just gone too far away from God. All this disobedience, it draws us away from our fellowship with God and is usually subtle, but is always dangerous. So he's saying faith is active. Faith requires focus. This isn't about the promised land. This is not about a Sabbath day. This is living in faithful fellowship with the God who creates life. And until that fellowship, that rest is sealed for all eternity. So for us, that's why over and over and over, the Hebrew writer uses words like hold fast, consider Jesus, do not drift, because we drift towards worry. We drift towards the world. We drift towards acceptance. We drift towards doubt. But to strive is to fight off the apathy, to fight off the unbelief, to fight for your heart, to fight for the promises, to strive. This is where our hearts is key. Whether I stay in it or whether I quit, whether I endure or whether I leave depends on what's inside of me. So one more time he says, let us fear. Let us be diligent. Let us hold fast our confession. And let us draw near with confidence. So let me ask, are you tired? Most people say yes. So we're saying tonight,